What's going on, guys? You are listening to the You Can Miss Me With That podcast. My name's Luther O'Kale. You guys know how the intro goes by now. But this is the new format of the podcast from now on. I'm really interested to try this. But I just, you know, had a few observations this week. And I just kind of want to get them out there. Like, so I'm shopping at Price Chopper, right? And I guess for all my California people, how would I classify a Price Chopper? It's like a Food for Less. It's not high class enough to be Ralph's, but it's not too low to be 99 cent store. Even though, no shame on that. I love the 99 cent store. They do good work. There's a reason they've been around for so long. So I'm shopping at Price Chopper, right? And then there's this girl at the register. Like, fellas, you ever just seen, actually not even, just for everybody, you ever just seen just an attractive person? Like, she's so attractive, you just don't get it. Like your brain doesn't compute it. Like, this girl looked like she should be only, like, shopping at Target if she's shopping at the regular stores, like a Trader Joe's. Like, this girl, like, the best way to say she was attractive, like, drop-dead gorgeous, any other, I'm not going to do any other adjectives. Any other adjectives I got? Like it wasn't fair. Like, she was so attractive. Obviously, dudes was looking. Married dudes was looking. But they're literal females. Like, maybe just who I was around, who rolled for the other team, were like, I would love to take her out somewhere. And in my mind, my cynical, dumb mind, I'm like, why is she here by herself? You know? Like, she don't look like she should be shopping at a Price Chopper. Like, Target. That's where she should only be shopping. Right? And, of course, my favorite part of the whole time seeing her was that some dude walked up and shot his shot at her. Right? Mind you, I'm not the best looking dude, you know? I'm not the best looking dude in the yard. But, like, I look better than that dude. I can wholeheartedly say that. But that dude has more, He has more... Jesus, come on, Luther, just say it. He has more confidence than I do, you know? And he's just like, screw it, man. What's the word? She can just say no. And he taught us all a lesson because he got her phone number. Could have been a fake phone number, but nah, I'm going with he got her phone number for real, for real. Like, he just stood there at the self-checkout line at Price Chopper and got her phone number. Like, she probably, as dumb as this is to think, she probably doesn't get a lot of people who approach her because she's just that attractive. Like, dudes are just, or women or whatever, are just scared to approach her. And the dudes that do are, like, protected, if you get what I mean. Like, they're, like, when I say protected, like, they have somebody already, like a married dude would approach her, or, like, a dude with a girl. Basically, people who are taken, you know? And maybe not even dudes. There are women out there. I'm out here discriminating for no reason. But that's all I'm saying. It's like, they're protected. So, like, single dudes like me, they ain't out here just shooting their shot at her because they're rejection. And, of course, she's so attractive that I'm like, my man just walked up to her, like, literally in front of, like, families. Price Chopper, they're probably the security guards and the who watch out for shoplifting. They probably got a camera on her. They're talking about it, and they're just watching her, watching this dude walk up to her and shoot his shot. And it was like, all right. So shout out to that dude. Good luck. Hopefully everything works out for y'all. Y'all get married one day. Cause my goodness, man. My goodness. I had another thing, but this is just a stupid thing. Like, you ever just been on Facebook, especially this week, because my birthday was on Thursday. It was last Thursday when you hear this, or March. No, never mind. My birthday was last Thursday. And, you know, you get the usual people who reach out to you, say happy birthday, whatever. You know, a few people talk crap. Then my mom busts out this unknown picture of me that, you know, she has a ton, which... I fully expect that's one of the best parts of my birthday. But it's not even that. It's like, you know, you just kind of scrolling through Facebook. And you ever just get it like the people Facebook thinks you know? And all of a sudden, you're just sitting there, you're scrolling through, like, me, my butt's like, who the hell are these people? You know? Like, who the hell are these people? You ever just saw that? Like, who the hell are all these people? Like, I have no idea who some of these people are. And it's just me, like, Facebook, like, what the fuck? Yeah, I might cuss a lot in this podcast, just FYI. But it's not about what the open's going to be. It's going to be about the actual topic, and you saw it in the title. So, yeah. I don't know. So, yeah. Those are my two observations this week. Just dumb things. But I really want to get to the open, and I'm going to talk about the XFL and how important it actually could be. So, you know, I mean, for those of you that know, like, the XFL is the spring football league that's happening right now. And it's actually been, I've been able to catch a game here and there, and it's actually been pretty fun to watch. They have really innovative rules. The double forward pass is actually a really good idea, and just of a way to speed up play, to make sure that, you know, there's a lot, as much scoring as possible, especially with a new league, when you're trying to establish players. And just being able to watch, they have some established some people that at least certain fans, some certain NFL fans would know, like Cardale Jones, Landry Jones, a couple people, like, was it Eli Rogers, who receiver played for the Steelers. Like, there's some NFL players mixed in there, but there are also some people who probably be on a practice squad or who came in from the CFL, some people from the AAF who joined the league. And there are a lot of really innovative things, such as the kickoff rule, which I really, really love. I really love the kickoff rule, which is something I definitely see the NFL's taken from the XFL in the future to save the kickoff. Because quite frankly, to me, I love the kickoff in the NFL. I actually kind of like it the way it is now. The only problem is, maybe not now, the way it used to be before they added a few more rules. And I understand why they made those rules, because you don't want to have the kickoff was actually one of the highest injury causing plays in football. But it's also, there's nothing more impactful than a kickoff return or a punt return. Just that suddenness of, like, oh my God, touchdown. You know, that's why Devin Hester's probably going to be a Hall of Famer, because he's the greatest special teamer or punt and kickoff returner of all time. So the way they kind of have it now, with they have the kickoff team and the return team 5 yards away from each other. And they have the kicker by himself who kicks off at the regular spot. You have a kickoff, and the teams don't, like, the kickoff team doesn't attack the ball until the returner actually catches it. And the kicker actually has to catch it between he has to kick it between the goal line or the 20 or 25 yard line. And if the ball goes into the end zone, the offense automatically gets it at the 45. So it forces the kicker to kick it in play, you know. It forces the returns have more impact. And in my mind, if I was an XFL team, I'd be focusing a lot more on that kickoff than you actually are. Because every time I watch, it looks like the teams kind of get it to, like, the 30, the 35 yard line. But I feel like a team that kind of gets how to return there first could dominate. And unless there's just some dude out here skirting the rules, it really reduces, like, a lot of injuries during that time. I really like it. I actually watched the first return, I think 2 weeks ago, where they did a reverse on a kickoff and scored. But the only reason I'm saying the XFL is so important is because of what it could be, right? So the XFL, this isn't the first time, like, this isn't the first rendition of the XFL. The XFL actually came before and only in its one and only season back in the early 2000s, I believe 2001 or 2002, I believe. So to kind of sum up how the XFL failed the first time, I basically just kind of look at the AAF of a year ago and how hastily, like, that league, like, its downfall came. But basically, the XFL was created by Vince McMahon and some few partners. And for the people who don't know who Vince McMahon is, Vince McMahon is the owner and CEO of WWE, and basically the world, you know, the fake the wrestling, but it's not really wrestling, so it's fake, but it's incredible. I'm actually watching a pay-per-view right now on it because Jesus, it's basically a way for me to be 10 years old again, because I remember watching it when I was 10, and you know, you kind of grow out of it. But so you had Mr. McMahon, especially at that point, which was deemed the Attitude Era, which is basically crazy stuff was happening. Stone Cold Steve Austin, Triple H, The Rock was peak The Rock before he went to Hollywood and became Dwayne The Rock Johnson, you know. And I remember that time so well, just kind of, you know, as I'm trying to figure out the language and just being captivated by these dudes who are doing crazy stuff every Monday night and then turn into Thursday. Then it was literally like my whole week was like kind of scheduled around it. I'd rush home from, you know, from school, even though the Monday Night Raw wasn't starting for 3 hours, just so I could get ready and take care of all my homework so I could watch it. But the XFL failed the first time due to horrendously poor planning. The rules weren't good, the pace of play was terrible, the quality of play on the field was bad. So the XFL, the first game, it drew I think over 20 million viewers. It was on NBC. Sorry, I'm going off of this off my memory because I left my notes at home. Not at home. I left my notes at work. But, you know, and just to kind of give you an idea, the defenders could jostle receivers all the way downfield. That's cool. That's awesome, but that also led to low-scoring games, especially as the NFL was kind of growing into the way it is now. People don't want to watch 10-3 games. Just look at the Super Bowl. Last year? Yeah, last year when the Patriots played the Rams and how boring that Super Bowl was. I know my squad was in it, but still terrible. You know, you want to watch a game like, 2 years ago where the Chiefs and the Rams just threw down. We're talking 45 to whatever, however that score was. Just remember how much fun that game was. So, but the XFL had all these things, like they were trying to be more extreme because, as Vince McMahon said, the league was going soft. The craziest part is, he wasn't wrong, but the league even back then was still like a man's league, because even though the NFL was hiding concussions from its players. But that's besides the point. So they had this crazy rule, like instead of like kickoffs or coin flips, you know, you go up to the 50-yard line for coin flips, they'd put a ball in the middle of the field, and then each team would choose a guy to go basically jockey for that ball. So they line up at like the 10 and run to the 50, see who could possess the ball first, and that team would get the ball first. But first of all, you wouldn't put your best player out there, but then that would also lead to injuries. You know, and then as viewership declined, Vince, he owned the league itself, like he owned all the teams and all that. He began going to more racier and racier content. By that, I'm basically was like sexually exploiting the cheerleaders. Like he basically turned it into a WWE show. Even like the first game of the year at the LA Coliseum, he had The Rock and Stone Cold come out and like cut promos. And for promos, like, remember, you know, when you watch wrestling shows, for those of you who watch wrestling shows, the wrestlers will come out and do like a quick monologue about why they want to fight this guy or basically anything like that. They had The Rock come out in the middle of the LA Coliseum and cut a promo about their league. And first of all, it was bad because at that point, The Rock was at the peak of his powers, man. He could cut promos on anybody. He basically ended somebody's career via promo. Like he ended his career in the eyes of the fans. The wrestler's name was Mr. Ass. There's too many questions. You can look it up yourself. But even having Stone Cold threaten to beat up the NFL commissioner. It's like, I'm going to open up a can of whoop ass with Paul Tagliabue. And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so. So relying on these gimmicks literally basically showed that the XFL did not believe in its actual content compared to, you know, the actual play on the field. Like they didn't believe in the actual play on the field. So they had to rely on all these gimmicks, which led to the national sports media not giving the league the credibility it deserves. So as viewership declined, all the way up to like the championship game where the teams, besides becoming the champion, winning the trophy, they fought for like $1 million or $10 million, whatever that money was, so that, you know, which the winning team would get and would be split evenly. And then right after that, the league basically folded because the NBC did not like the ratings. They wasted too much money on it and the league folded. But Mr. McMahon shrewdly kept the rights to the XFL. You can actually kind of go see the old XFL website and how kind of trashy it was. But that's it's the early 2000s. What websites, of course, like it's just supposed to look better. You know, it's been basically 20 years. And the XFL laid dormant. You can actually go also watch all the games from that one season on the WWE video library. So that's weird. You could go on WWE.com and whatever the video library is and watch football. You know, the NFL actually took a lot of kind of innovations from the XFL after it folded, like introducing the Skycam. Let me look this up, because despite the XFL folding, it made the NFL product actually better. Because even though the league was not threatening the NFL, the NFL at that point, it was still kind of called the No Fun League. So the NFL just realized, hey, there's some things that that the XFL did that they wanted to take care of. So hold up. I'm actually looking here now at this website article by thecomeback.com. And basically the headline, 15 years later, the NFL should thank the XFL for all these innovations. Like having fireworks that you know, when you watch like your team run out and do all that, like it was more, like it was just more, it was just like, you could tell it was more exciting. It caught your eye, like allowing in-game access. Like, you know, like I told you, the cable cams, the XFL cams, it kind of give you a different way to watch a game. You know, you got to kind of know your players. They did this thing where for a week, or they allowed players to put nicknames on the back of their jerseys. Like, remember the He Hate Me guy? And that guy actually ended up playing in the Super Bowl, the Carolina Panthers, New England Patriots Super Bowl. Even though he lost because he played for the Panthers, but he ended up playing there. So a couple guys from that league made it onto NFL rosters. And I mean, it kept NBC kind of interested in football to now they have Sunday night, even though there's some shenanigans going on with the announcers right now. We're talking like trading an announcer to ESPN from NBC, but that's another thing. So, kind of after all that brief history, Mr. McMahon, geez, I'm just calling him that because whatever. Mr. McMahon in 2018 announced, was it 2018 or 2016? I think it was 2016. Announced the XFL's return, and it kind of foreshadowed with him selling off a ton of his shares of his WWE stock to to be able to afford the money to start up the league again. With brand new logos, brand new team names, like the Roughnecks, the Battlehawks, the Vipers, and they chose a few cities like LA, New York, and I really like the product so far. And what you can definitely tell in this rendition of the XFL compared to the old one was the time and patience that was taken into it. You know, the first XFL, like I told you guys before, was a rush and cobbled mess. You know, cobbled together mess. And this XFL definitely does not have that. But people have been burned by the XFL the first time, which the questions were asked, how long would this league even last? And the AAF basically the year before, which was so smart of the XFL to just kind of wait and watch to see what happened with this league. I'm not going to go into the AAF itself, besides the fact that it was an unmitigated disaster to the point where players had to get their own flights back home. They had to take care of their own medical bills from any injuries they incurred from the league, but that's completely beside the point. I don't want to go into that because that makes me angry. And a lot of people worried about how much access or input Mr. McMahon would have on the would have on like on the league itself. So from what we've seen so far, Mr. McMahon is completely hands off. All he does is just kind of he bankrolls the league. He's the man, like, you know, he's basically like the silent partner. Which when you kind of look at it from the wrestling side, a lot of people thought Mr. McMahon was going to spend more time with the XFL. And now this, I'm saying, especially because there was a recent pay-per-view in Saudi Arabia and something happened with a where Mr. McMahon makes some decisions and it's harmed the rest of the WWE product. But I don't know anything about that. I'm just watching the damn pay-per-view because I think it's weird. It's so weird. It's so weird kind of watching it again and not knowing who the hell anybody is. It's so freaking weird. It's so weird. It's so dumb. Oh my God. So what the XFL is doing now, they have a chance to, if the league survives, which I think they can, because Mr. McMahon has put enough money into the league for it to last at least 3 years. So there are certain steps I think the XFL needs to take in order to last even further than that. So I think the XFL should not, first of all, should not get ahead of itself, not overthink its breaches after this season. They are not a competitor to the NFL. As of right now, I don't think anything ever can be a competitor to the NFL. You know, got 100 years of tradition. The NFL has this thing down pat. But there's also a risk of overexposure with the NFL trying to add a 17th game. And I also read a story where they want this proposal to fill in the CBA. So they add an 18th game, which completely risks overexposure to football. Adding on, this is even before the season ends and you go to the XFL. I think the NFL model, the way it is perfect. But, you know, owners want more money. So they're going to go attack more money, which I believe is a problem. But that's another story. Maybe if I can get Josh or somebody like that to talk about it. But the XFL can be a competitor. Instead of going after the NFL, they go after the NCAA. And the only reason I say that is because it's technically the NCAA's fault. Now, I don't want you to get kind of confused here. I'm saying it's the NCAA's fault because of, you know, the dumb decisions that organization makes, the way it carries itself and also its perception. Mind you, I'm not one of those people who says the NCAA needs to disappear, needs to be abolished. No, because it does serve a purpose. But for it to be so archaic in the way it runs that you don't see where the tea leaves are going, whether you like it or not. Like, you just have to understand and you have to adjust. That's what the NBA is really good at. That's what the NFL is really good at. Major League Baseball, not so much. But, I mean, it's still better than the NCAA, in my opinion. So, remember last year when California passed that law saying that, saying that, players can make money off their likeness. So to kind of give you an example, a couple years ago or a few years ago when Johnny Manziel was still in college, during the summer he went somewhere and signed autographs and got paid for it, and then he got suspended for like half a game. You know, mind you, that while that is an extreme thing or a dumb thing to get suspended for, but there's also other instances. Like if I had a football player from KU and he was tired and he spent a night on my couch, he could get suspended for that because that's quote unquote impermissible benefits. Getting in trouble. So it's basically like you're watching that tyrant who still wants to grab a hold of its power so bad that now it overreacts and attacks everybody, which only creates more problems for himself. Mind you, there are people who want the players to get paid. I don't know how that system works. I don't know how that system will work. I'm gonna leave that to somebody else. But they should at least be able to make money off their own likeness. Whether they like it or not, especially in the NCAA, football and basketball players basically bankroll that entire system. They bankroll it so that teams can have water polo teams that people can pay to say they are part of, or rich families can pay to say that their kids are part of, even though those kids aren't part of the water polo team. They're part of the crew team. They help baseball live. They help softball, dance, cheer, all these other sports that they offer. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I mean, they literally make billions. And how some of these athletic departments show that they operate at a loss, even though every year, some school is getting a new locker room, even though they just got one, to attract more and more kids to come to that school. So with the negative perception of the NCAA, the XFL has an opening, in my opinion, to start recruiting, first of all, incoming freshmen and college stars from the NCAA. There's a safety in the league now. His last name is Jefferson, I believe. He went to West Virginia. He's actually academically ineligible, so he was going to get suspended the next season. And I believe his mom has some medical complications, so he said, screw it, I'm going to go to the XFL, make money. Now, I think that they have a tier system of who gets paid. Quarterbacks get paid the most because, of course, they do. And it goes down from there. I don't know the exact numbers for the different tiers, but I don't want to. So I don't want to really speculate. But I know we're talking, nobody gets paid less than $50,000, I believe, a season. But then you also get bonuses for winning games, playoff games, and other bonuses. And of course, also winning the whole shebangabang, like the championship and stuff. You get bonuses for that. So this player from West Virginia, this safety, he got accepted into the NFL draft pool. So the NFL is going to take good players wherever they can find them. I mean, there was a kid who got drafted from Germany a couple years ago who played wide receiver, you know, just because some team like, hey, he might be able to help our team. So this guy is an interesting test case to see where the NFL rates him, because they obviously see him in college. He's probably on some team's draft board. And then now they've seen him actually play professional football. And, you know, he's still of age to be an NFL draft hopeful, because there's this rule where you have to be at least 3 years out of high school to qualify to play in the NFL. And also, I think, to qualify for the draft pool, you know, or else kids would just be shooting out straight from high school like it's the NBA. And the reason they do that is because, Jesus Christ, imagine some 18-year-old kid right out of college trying to play pro football and getting murdered by some dude. And when I say murdered, just getting worked, physically dominated. There's a reason that 3-year gap is there, so that you can get physically prepared, not even adding the mental part, for the league itself. So this Jefferson cat, if everything works out well for him, which I think it will, at first, well, just the fact that they can show that there's another path to the NFL besides just going straight to college, where they're still making money off of you. At one point, when California passed that law, the NCAA was like, we're just going to bar California from all competitions. And sure, California's not the football power it used to be, but they're still big names. Stanford, USC, UCLA. So you're just going to bar that entire state, which is the largest state in the union in terms of population. You're just going to bar that state from the NCAA, from playing in postseason games. And then immediately after that, New York was like, oh, we're going to jump in too. So the NCAA was forced to adopt the new policy where players can just make money off their likeness. And the perfect way, it's like, let's say you just got some dude from Bismarck, North Dakota. I could probably be saying the wrong Dakota. But he gets to go to KU. You know, maybe he's a small town guy from North. And he goes to KU. He plays a little bit. But then when he goes back home, a car dealership wants to sponsor him. You know, hey, this is our cat. He's representing us. He should be able to make money off of that. You know, I don't know if the NCAA should start paying players. That's a whole different discussion. But just being able to use his likeness to make a few money, make some bread on the side. In another extreme case, Jefferson's literally going to the NFL early because he needs money for his mother's medical treatments. And I don't think the NCAA is trying to pay for his mom's medical treatments. You know, and if the NCAA was literally classifying as a student athlete, they wouldn't use athletes themselves in their extra general in the general like description of a school. Like, you know, when you were going to college or you're getting ready to go to college, and then you'd get a college letter, whether it's just, hey, come to our university, enroll here, whether you're an athlete or not. And they'd show an athlete, either scoring a touchdown or shooting a shot or doing whatever, write in the thing. And that's a way to promote the school, but because you're promoting the athletics. I don't know how much of a factor it is for just a kid who's just going to be a student in a school, and how bad the athletics are in making your college decision if you've been accepted to multiple schools just there to go to as a student. But I mean, look at the student section. Look at all that stuff. You know, just look at a KU alone. So that's where I think the XFL could be really, really dominant, could really survive by getting those young college kids or getting college kids. I mean, right now you get the ones who are academically ineligible or who have something happen. But it's like, hey, you can immediately come to the XFL, start making money, especially if you're trying to go through that 3-year timer to get to the NFL. And you get your film out. You actually get to see what it's like to be a professional. I also think, besides recruiting those kids, they need to move stadiums. They shouldn't be in those big NFL stadiums anymore. The perception looks terrible, you know, especially in New York, where they had that New York MetLife, which seats like 100,000 people, and not that many people are going to come to your games. Move those games to the MLS stadiums. And those stadiums get loud just from me going to Sporting and seeing how loud that place gets. And that place wasn't even full when I went. But go to a Sporting, like move all those XFL games to the MLS stadiums. And man, you have something there. Mind you, the Seattle team, the XFL Seattle team, actually represents pretty well. Leave it up to Seattle to still have a home field advantage in a whole different football league. Mind you, they're not filling up the Seattle Seahawks stadium, but if those games get moved to MLS stadiums, man, and you have that place packed, 30,000 people going nuts, going crazy, and because the XFL product is good enough for you to watch. If you're a Chiefs fan, you're literally watching the best quarterback in the league, and you're not going to get that in the XFL. You're not going to get that high quality offense or quarterback play in the XFL. But man, y'all need to go and watch this PJ Walker cat. Man, this kid's good. He beat out Connor Cook, who's also a former NFL quarterback, to play. Yeah, I believe he's going to be the MVP of the league. He's the best player in the league, bar none. He's just making dumb plays every week. Just go and, for those people who remember watching Michael Vick play, man, PJ Walker's like that, except looks like he has a better arm. Maybe it's just the people that he's playing against. But my goodness, man, he has that team firing on all cylinders. PJ Walker is a stud. Oh, you need to go watch. You need to go catch a game. Hold up, let me find out what team he plays for. It's weird because I remember him, but not his team. And he's one of the first things that comes up. He plays for the Houston Roughnecks, number 11. He's a stud, man. He's such a good player. Oh my goodness. He played his college football at Temple. He's gonna get NFL looks. Cardale Jones, for the DC Defenders. He's gonna get NFL looks as well because he's been playing pretty well. Actually, the last game I watched, he didn't play that well, but he's been playing pretty well also. So just my goodness, man. And he's so electrifying that you're just like, oh man, this is different. And you just kind of want to watch Houston play. I wasn't able to catch any XFL games this week, but I mean, I have them, they already have the full game up on YouTube. So I just watch them there during the week. So that's where the XFL could do basically three things, and they could last, I believe, a really long time, especially so that upcoming parents like my boy JT, who has a son now, I don't know if he wants his son to play football, but imagine him going through high school. He's been playing football. They're obviously colleges calling on him to go there. But then you also have the XFL, where you could start making at least $50,000 immediately. And for some families, that's huge, with obviously promotional opportunities and other things. The NCAA will not take the XFL seriously for now. They will not. And the XFL should just play its position. Should be like that saying, real G's move in silence. Make it move in silence. You just keep getting college athletes, you know? And sure, some will fail and some will work. But to be able to get those players to come in and showcase a whole new avenue for high school seniors to go. Do you want to go to college? You know, and it's not like they have trash facilities either. They're not going to, if you want to recruit those people, that's why Alabama, all this stuff, they have all these different things to try and wow you to go there. Like a salad bar, cereal bar in the locker room, like LSU having TVs and stuff in the locker room, showcasing your highlights during the week or whatever, you know? And I remember Oregon had this, like this locker, which hermetically seals your stuff so that it could clean your helmet, all that stuff, you know? So yeah, they have to rely on these gimmicks instead of actually, like the XFL is like, come to us, we'll give you some of the best facilities that we can give you, and you'll be playing professional football, and you're gonna get paid. Because no matter what the NCAA says, you're not going to be getting your full value in the NCAA, not unless they literally start paying you. And even then, you're not getting your full value, because it has to be equal. Because then you can't just say all the revenue generating sports like football, basketball, baseball, maybe some up for some other schools is different, that only those guys get paid. Which I think that if you're going to pay them, you have to start with the revenue generating sports first. So I'm sorry, water polo. I'm sorry, field hockey. I'm sorry, lacrosse. You're not getting paid. You don't bring the money in like football does. And you're just going to have to accept that. But you can still make money off your likeness, but you're not getting paid. So first things first, the XFL has to stay patient. Keep building your brand. And it's okay. It's okay. Right now, what you're doing in this first season, you are shattering expectations, because you're already more legitimate this season in the eyes of the national sports media than you were the first go around basically 20 years ago. You're already more legitimate. Your games are fun. You're on ESPN. I can watch you on CBS. You're more, and they're dedicated people who cover the XFL, but that are just not the national sportsmen. I actually suggest, if you guys are kind of trying to get a look at the league, go listen or watch these YouTubers' videos called Flemlo Raps and That's Good Sports. They actually do a really good job of covering the league. And they even have some other sports guys who chose not to cover the league. And they're sitting there like, next year we might have something, you know? Number two, the other thing that they have to do, okay? Move the games from the giant NFL stadiums to the MLS stadiums. You move them there, that is a home field advantage if you ever build. Those stadiums are designed to be loud. They can house, from what we've seen with the Los Angeles Chargers, they can house actual NFL games there at those stadiums. And they can be very loud, especially in a place like Seattle, which is just known for being loud. Dear God, if Kansas City ever gets one, you already have a dominant soccer team. You have the world champion football team. Your baseball team apparently is on the come up, right? They should literally have an NBA team. But that's another time. That's another discussion. But imagine having a XFL team here. And saying like, hey, screw Seattle. They think they're loud. No, we're going to come out and support our XFL team so we can be loud. And, oh, if Mahomes is at a game, you bet money that Chiefs fans are going to go to that game. It's just more football. And number three, recruit mainly from college. Take college players. There's no rule that says that they can't start doing from now. And as you recruit more college players, you're going to recruit more high school seniors. Your greatest asset, in my opinion, is the fact that you want to come over here and get paid. You want to actually be a professional instead of whatever that thing is that you're basically getting taken advantage of. You are. It's not, first of all, they are being taken advantage of, but the NCAA is also providing them benefits as well. They're getting a free education for whatever different people put different values on that. Some people are literally like, I'm just trying to get through this as fast as I can so that I can go make money in the NFL to support my family. And the XFL is like, bet. And they're also, if you're a good enough player, you can move tiers, which means you could potentially make more money. And also, you already have a chance to get endorsements. You already have a chance to get, you already make money off your likeness. You're doing all that you have all these advantages that, sure, you might not be getting paid unless you're getting paid under the table by some college. And hey, whatever. No skin off my back. You do you. But, you know, you have no, unless you're, there's no reason for you to get in trouble for getting paid in the XFL. However, if there is a few downsides, it's overexposure, especially if the XFL, especially if the NFL increases its season. I mean, and the XFL is already going up against basketball, but they're actually at the best part of basketball, the earliest part of the season, where really most of the season happens before the All-Star break. And then mainly, like, they'll probably be done. They'll definitely be done before the finals. Like, the XFL season will be done before the finals. So you don't really have to, you're going to head-to-head with basketball, but you're not going to head-to-head with, like, the strength of basketball. Really, basketball, like, basketball to me, I really started watching it right around the All-Star break to all the way through after that. You know, if I do start watching basketball, you don't really have to worry about baseball. Baseball's more regional than anything now. But it may be more national now because of the Astros and that cheating scandal. But that's besides the point. Also, I think this Open has gone on way too long. But hey, it's my first time. It's my first chance doing it. I've already gone 40 minutes. And I haven't even gone to what I wanted to talk about. So, yeah. There's overexposure and other risks. But we shall see in the future. Remember those three topics. And we'll go from there. I promise I'll tighten these up in the future. Sorry, this was just my first time, and I kind of want to let it free flow the Open before I actually get to what I actually want to talk about. So yeah, XFL, those three things, I think they could definitely last a long time, especially a way to let parents, future parents, know that, hey, you don't always have to go to the NCAA. You don't always have to go to college. Like, you know how people say certain jobs you don't have to go to college for? Ironically, football could be one of those jobs. It technically is now, but it's like more highlighted now with the XFL, especially if it lasts. Okay, but now I actually want to get into what I actually wanted to talk about, which was this documentary I watched last week called The Trials of Gabriel Fernandez. That documentary hit me in the heart. Like, for those of you who haven't seen it, I want you to pause this podcast right now and go watch it. It's chilling. Like, the documentary made me cry, which is because I've cried a lot on this podcast, at least three times on this podcast. And that documentary made me cry to literally watch a whole system. The whole child support or child care system of LA County, which is where I used to live, failed this kid. So in a quick synopsis of the trials of Gabriel Fernandez, it covers basically the trial of Gabriel Fernandez's parents, going from basically the night that he was killed through the fallout after. And you kind of learn about his mom, the boyfriend, the family, and all these like warning signs that were given that like people didn't do their jobs. At least they knew they didn't do their jobs correctly. And Gabriel Fernandez, 8-year-old kid, died. He was killed by his mom and her boyfriend. Like, and he was locked in a cupboard. Like, he had handcuffs on his feet and ankles. They put a sock in his mouth. They covered his eyes with a bandana whenever people were coming over. Like, they treated him like dirt. Like, they wouldn't even feed him actual food. They fed him cat litter. Like, they beat this kid down every day. And then they beat him down one too many times, and the kid, he didn't get up. Like, they go through this, the hospital scene. Also, spoilers, by the way. I guess for people who haven't seen it yet, so spoilers. I guess I should have said it earlier, but, I mean, spoilers. But after getting beat by the boyfriend one more time and realizing that the kid, he wasn't getting up, they take him in an ambulance to the hospital, and they detail kind of like what happens when a victim comes to the hospital. It's chaotic, you know. They have multiple doctors working on Gabriel, like having to restart his heart multiple times because he just keeps flatlining, you know. And then after the children's hospital comes to whatever hospital they went to, they take him away. And then the nurse kind of sits down and talks about it. She's like, oh my God. And all the different injuries, like he had burn marks on the back of his head, burn marks on his neck, like a whole bunch of ligature marks. Some of his fingers were swollen. His feet were swollen. Like he was beat the fuck up. And I'm going to, like I said before, I'm going to cuss a lot. But the reason I'm going to cuss a lot is because his parents did, his mom did this to him. His mother and her boyfriend did this to him. Like they bring up some kid who was one of his friends at his school. And said, well, the things that hit me really hard was that his parent took his life. Quote, it's perfect. His parent took his life. And he says the thing, she says the thing that I say, it's just dumb. It really is. As a parent, I mean, in a perfect world, you're going to take care of your child through thick and thin. As morbid as it sounds, you're going to lay down your life so that your kid can live in a perfect world. Right? I mean, you can just listen to any person who becomes a parent. Something just changes you. Full disclosure for me, I don't think I want to be a parent. But that doesn't mean if I do end up being a parent by whatever means, I'm going to treat my kid like shit. That's what they do to this kid. You know, when the kid was born, the mother didn't even want him. You know, basically left the kid at the hospital before, I believe it was a brother who's gay and his partner came to pick up the kid. You know, the first 4 years of Gabriel's life, I need to stop calling him the kid. The first 4 years of Gabriel's life, he lived with that family. Lived with the homosexual parents, and then the only reason that he stopped living with them, the kid was happy. There was finally show the picture from that man. That was a happy kid. The reason that Gabriel was taken away from his first family was that somebody said that one of those two was molesting Gabriel. But what the documentary covers, that accusation was false. But it's also an old school Hispanic family. And there's certain things that I think my family relate with that family in terms of how to understand homosexuality, like how the grandfather or the father of the family would talk crap to his son who's gay and saying, oh, when Gabriel says that he loves you guys would turn him gay. Like first of all, what does that have to do with anything? Whether they're gay or not, if they're great parents. You know, eventually they're going to have that conversation. I'm like, oh, dad, are you gay? Yes, son. And blah, blah, blah. This is what we're going to have to do. But that doesn't mean we're not going to love you we're going to change how we love you. You know, so after Gabriel lived with his, he moved with it in with his grandparents for 2 years or a few years. And then the last 6 months of his life, he lived with his mom and her boyfriend. And then he died. They used to beat that kid up all the time. They used to beat Gabriel up so much. Like they said that he would talk back. And they said that they beat him up because he was gay. And the main attorney of the Gabriel Fernandez case actually brings up, it doesn't matter if he was gay. It doesn't matter if he was. I mean, the kid's 8 years old. He's just trying to get some direction. He's trying to understand what he's doing wrong, so that he could make his mom happy. And you know, they had child support services come a lot. They didn't really do their jobs to the best of the point that it was a landmark case where 4 social workers were charged also in connection to the death of Gabriel Fernandez. The boyfriend got sentenced to death row. The mom took a plea deal for life in prison. And I hated that when I watched it. If anything, the mother should also die. She should also die. She should also go to and receive the death penalty. She's the mother. She's the biological mother of Gabriel. She deserves, if anything, the sentences should be switched. That's just my opinion. The worst part was, while all this was happening to Gabriel, the biological dad was in prison. And he loved Gabriel more than she did. And he, when he comes out of prison, he feels terrible. Because by the time he comes out, Gabriel's already dead. And he says this thing, if I didn't get in trouble, Gabriel would be alive right now. Like, Gabriel would be alive right now. He says that. He cries in the courtroom. Him and the attorney have a great, like, kind of relationship as they kind of work through Gabriel's death. And, you know, you get to meet the father in the documentary and just kind of see how he is. And you feel his pain, you know, you feel his pain. You feel the family's pain. And then it comes out that the mother she dropped out of school in the eighth grade. She was gang raped, apparently. I don't mean to make it sound like that, but I'm going off the notes that I took, but also what they say. She was gang raped, and then she also used hard drugs. So especially while she was developing, that didn't affect her mind right. But Gabriel was her third kid, and they had this thing where it's scapegoat syndrome. Let me see if I wrote it down. He was the victim of family scapegoat syndrome, where all of the family's failure, doubts, whatever, it was all projected onto Gabriel. Like, he wasn't even allowed to play with other kids, and that's how the night that he died, he was playing with his sister, his older sister, and he wasn't supposed to. And then, of course, the mom calls the boyfriend comes home, beats the crap out the kid, Gabriel dies. Even when they call the police, they said that he fell in the bathtub. And when the doctor documented his injuries, there's no way no fall from the bathtub could do that. When the sheriffs were out there talking to the family, they were more concerned about the cats in the house than they were Gabriel. Even to the point they tried to bring up this excuse that they didn't let the boyfriend go in the ambulance with Gabriel to the hospital. And the sheriffs and the EMTs were like, most parents fight us to get in the ambulance, even though knowing that they can go with whoever's in the with a family member, whatever, whenever they want. Most parents fight us. They didn't care. Like, they cared more about the cats in the house. And even when they go back to his first family, the mother's brother, who was gay, like, he's crushed. He ended up getting deported back to El Salvador, but his family wouldn't even let him go see him when they were going to take him off life support. His family didn't let the guy go see Gabriel one last time. Like, he was crushed, and he also lost his partner. So it's just him. Like, he's like, my family's gone. And he has this quote where it's like, I never knew pain until Gabriel died. And he just starts crying. Like, and you know, the people in the family who don't blame the mother, they blame the boyfriend because they think the boyfriend corrupted the mother. But then her literal sister and her literal mother are like, if you knew the mother, you knew she was gonna harm somebody. They didn't think it would be her son, but she was going to harm somebody. And as they go through the trial, you see the systematic failing of almost every level of the child care system or child support system or the family services system in LA County, especially, where the social workers failed him because they didn't adequately check up on him. Like, even the last social worker who said that the family was okay, she backdated her report so that she would never have to go back to that family again. The cops failed them because they used to get a lot of calls to that apartment where Gabriel lived all the time. But never once did they just ask, hey, can we see Gabriel? Can we just make sure he's okay? They never asked that once, to the point that when they ran an internal investigation of their practices without telling the attorney, so the attorney had to file some kind of request to get the documents on that investigation because they wouldn't give it to him. And then the sheriffs and the cops basically threatened his family. And the attorney's wife also worked as a sheriff for LA County. Like, I'm not making all this up. Like, it's all these different instances of where the proper blocks or the proper supports to help a child in Gabriel's situation were in place and they weren't used. Like, they brought this lady out of retirement to kind of revamp the family services and child services system in LA County. And she created this program where if a social worker was in trouble, she would go to that program and then they would help her out. You know, they would work hand in hand. And as, you know, more and more children will be taken out of their home. They also say why taking a child out the home is like the worst possible thing you could do. That's the last resort. And they show in a few cases of like a child, no matter what that parent did, is still grabbing onto the mom saying, no, I want to stay. I want to do this. I want to do that. I don't want to leave. You know, and that's also heartbreaking. So, I mean, it's hard. It's really hard. It's really hard to just kind of sit down and watch. It's a 5-part documentary series, and just kind of watching as all these different things come up. You even meet his first grade teacher. And in a way she technically failed him, but she's like the least culpable. Like, what is a teacher supposed to do? You know? I know they brought up one thing where if I was a teacher, I would never let him go home. She's a mandated reporter. She reported it the first time. And then it got to the point where, Gabriel told her not to report it because when the lady comes, which was a social worker, used to go to the house, he used to get beat after. The social worker would come to his house, to Gabriel's house, and talk to the rest of the family. Meanwhile, Gabriel was put in a cupboard. Like, imagine your kitchen cupboard, you know, where you put your pots and pans, except they take out the little middle part that makes the shelf. They put him in there, tied him up, handcuffs on his appendages, a sock in his mouth, a bandana over his eyes so he can't even see. And they kept him in there while social services was in there. They never asked to see Gabriel. She only documented one injury when at the time of his death, there was a myriad of injuries all over her body. You know, they subpoenaed and charged her a coworker of hers and both supervisors, one supervisor for each social worker. Like, it was bad. Like, to the point where at one point the teacher is, she calls her principal in and they're like, look, we can't send him home. Look at him. Like, and he disappeared for long parts of the time. Then he came back and Gabriel looked terrible. And then the principal's like, no, you can't do that. We're only supposed to report it. And then after that incident with the principal, she never asked the principal for help again with anything. So she could only do what she could. She could only report it. I don't know what the rules are. She can't take Gabriel home with her. She can't do that. So what's she supposed to do? It's a shame that in the process of the supports that Gabriel has to possibly protect himself and save his life, that the teacher does the most to help him. She does more than the cops. She does more than family services does. She does the most, to the point where she is literally crying in the documentary about, man, she sit there wishing like, I wish I could have done more. And I'm sitting there like, lady, you did all you could. Short of the fact of taking that kid home with you, taking Gabriel home with you, that I don't think there's anything else she could have done. Two different social workers came to Gabriel's house. The first social worker, she was new to the game. Like, it's weird. And also, she was put in the emergency kind of services thing. Like, if you go to the ER, right? You don't want like a brand new nurse there, like fresh off nursing school to be there. Like, I feel like with me, in my opinion, emergency services or ER, you want some of your more experienced, like nurses in there, right? You want the more of your experienced staff to be in there, because you're going in there because something is really wrong with you, you know? I know I've seen those weird ER shows where like somebody come in and he has like a rod in him or something crazy is happening. So you want your more experienced doctors, your more experienced nurses to be there. And also, I think that should be the same with social workers. You know, you want some of your, in terms of emergency situations, I don't want a green social worker to come to my place. I want an experienced social worker who knows the science, who can make all that. And the first social worker was extremely gullible. Like, the mom knew how to manipulate the system, because when she was young, when she ran away from home, she was gang raped, all this stuff. Her parents used to fight a lot. So she knew how the game was played with the family services of LA County. She just knew how it was, and she was able to manipulate the first social worker enough. So when they had a second social worker, that lady just didn't flat out do her job effectively at all. To the point where she thought the family was a hassle. She backdated her report, saying that the family was A-OK. And meanwhile, a week or two later, the kid's dead due to foul play by the parents. And she was out here saying that the family was A-OK, to the point where they wanted to remove him off the program. You know, I'm going to remove him off the program completely, and we're going to move on to the next case. We're going to close this case down. I don't know. I watching it, you know, like I said, it broke my heart. And watching the attorney kind of go through it, and he's struggling also. Like, even to go back to the ER nurse, she celebrates Gabriel's birthday every year with her family. The only time she ever met Gabriel was when Gabriel was fighting for his life in that hospital bed. And she says this thing like, every ER nurse or every nurse has that one case that kind of sticks with them, no matter how far they go. Gabriel was that one kind of patient or case for her. Like, no matter what I do in life, that's always going to stay with me. You had professional EMTs who were EMTs for decades, literally saying, I have never seen what I saw with Gabriel. Like, it's different. Like, the trauma that he went through. I highly recommend you watch this documentary. Like, I don't know if parents should, especially like I told my coworker Megan, my friend Megan, like, don't watch it. I know how much she loves her family, her daughter. Like, don't watch it, man. It's going to hurt you. And oh my God, it did me too. Like, she just basically watched the whole system fail Gabriel. You know, they even do this thing where the mom and the boyfriend were really using him for welfare. And she goes in the welfare office to basically pick up a check. And the security guard sees watching Gabriel come in and looks at the back of his head, and their cigarette burns on the back of his head. And then he goes, because he's not a mandated reporter, he goes to a mandated reporter, and the lady he's talking to, like, oh my God, did you see that dumb haircut they put on Gabriel? And he's like, oh no, that wasn't a dumb haircut. That, do you see the burns on the back of his head? And he's like, oh my God, I thought I was the only one who saw it. And then he's sitting there like, why don't you report it? Why don't you report it? And she's like, I can't. Like, the supervisors don't want to pay for overtime. And they were like 15 minutes away from closing. And he's sitting there shocked, like, what do you mean the supervisor won't do overtime? We got to help the kid. So after talking to the kid a little bit more, he just says, fuck it. I'm going to go grab the information to report it, even though his bosses don't want him to report it. And he was basically threatened with his job. His job was threatened that if he did make that call, they would be like, he would lose his job. He makes the call. You hear the 911 call about the kid. The sheriffs go to the house, half-ass it again, and leave. And then you learn about this private company, which kind of does a lot of work in LA County, you know, with child services and things like that, and how it's more about the bottom line than anything else, than actually helping families, which is what you say your company does. I've been telling a lot of people that the more and more as older as, you know, as I get older, I don't want to have kids. I don't know why. I don't know. It's not even the fact that I don't think I'd be a good father. I think actually, as cocky as it sounds, I think I'd be a hell of a father. I've always been kind of good with kids, but that, you know, that's also other people's kids. So who knows when it's actually my kid. But I'm sitting here like, I can't believe that you would treat your son in that way. That even like as they're getting sentenced, she basically gives this bullshit ass apology that is half-assed. And even then, like, even the judge is like, in my years of doing this, like, you are terrible. Like he admonishes both of them for their treatment of Gabriel. They even go through the jury process and how there's one juror who's kind of holding up proceedings to seeing if the boyfriend deserved the death penalty or not, or whether or not he was guilty or not. Mind you, they do explain a very, like, succinct way. But at the time, you're just kind of sitting there like, what do you mean you don't know if he's fully guilty or he deserves the death penalty, you know? And that's also one of the, I guess, best parts of society. You know, it's just the fact that that guy wanted all the facts. Because when you rush to judgment, you more likely than not will make mistakes. Which is what, after kind of sitting down and thinking about it, I understood why that juror took the stance that he did. So after just kind of going through all of that and just seeing the system fail him like that. Like, I want to say sorry to Gabriel. Like, I'm never going to meet Gabriel. I don't even know what part of town or Palmdale that he's in. But that kid, from the picture of how people spoke about him, that kid deserved a chance to just kind of see what he could make of himself. Even to the end, Mother's Day, 2 weeks before he died, he wrote this card to his mom saying, "Hey, mom, I love you. Like, I promise I'll be good," as he's trying to figure out any way that he can to make his mom happy. And he takes these pictures with the MOM, like the letters for his mom. And he's all beat up. He has a black eye. He has all these things, like all these abrasions and bruises on his face. And he still loves his mom. But to the end, he still loved his mom. It's just too bad she didn't love him. He was just like her punching bag and somebody to make money off of. There are times where I'm really scared to be a father, you know, if I do end up being a father. And like a lot of people, I want to actually, if I do end up being a father, I want to have a girl first. And then I only want to have two kids because I'm not crazy, even though Philip Rivers is making sure that he can definitely represent for me because he has like 11 kids. He's going to get his own TLC show after he retires from football because, I mean, come on. Who doesn't want to have a reality show about a former professional football player raising 11 kids or 9 kids? Is it 9? Is he in the double digits yet? And raising that family and seeing how that family works. No, I want to have 2 kids if I do end up having kids. A girl first and a boy second. Because I want to have the girl first, and also in a way of honoring a fallen really close friend of mine. But also, I want the girl to teach the boy, you know, obviously when I'm not there, how to treat a woman, you know. There's only so much I can do. There's only so much my future wife or whatever will do. I think I may have brought it up before, but I hit this osmosis stage where it's just like, for a long time, a lot of people, and I think maybe I need to have this conversation with Corey, but kind of hitting this osmosis stage where you're like, you know what, like, I don't need other people to make me happy. I don't need to keep chasing girls, you know. You know, I want something that is fully and completely real, if you get what I mean. Like, I'm not out here in these streets anymore. Those days are done for me. Those days have actually been done for a few years. And, you know, sometimes you gotta say no to some people, even though you know, like as them, you know you can get some from some people. You know you could, they could be a girlfriend, you know, whatever. To the point I was in a relationship, was in a situationship, and it didn't work out. But I now know what I want. I'm really happy I know now what I want. Like, in a future girlfriend, wife, whatever. But also, how, knowing what I want, also kind of in a way I didn't think it would, it turned into my friends. I know this is a roundabout way of just kind of saying I want those values. As I preach those values into my kids, I also want my kids to double up those values that I have. No, as weird as it sounds, it's already hard enough being black. It's already hard enough being black and being a black man in America. You know, I think maybe in a way I've kind of found this way to just kind of be myself. And, you know, there's always going to be somebody when I walk past them on the street that's going to, some lady's going to clutch their purse a little harder because I'm walking past them. I can't change that. Lady, that's, if you want to carry those treasures to your grave, carry them to your grave. You know? But I'm damn sure if I do have kids, I'm going to protect those kids. You know? The way my mom protected me. That's why, in a roundabout way, I do not want my mom to watch this documentary. So, mom, if you're listening, don't watch it. As curious as I am to kind of see your reaction, I don't want to have this conversation with you. The opening was too long. I think the description of this documentary was too short. But, I mean, I could go one last thing, you know. After going through the whole trial, going through the twists and turns, seeing how the system failed Gabriel, seeing how Gabriel finally getting his justice, you know, seeing how the death of Gabriel affected how Los Angeles County and possibly the state, possibly the country, make them look at how their child services protocol, their family services protocol actually is, making them review it, making them change it if need be. You know, it was all over the news. The craziest part was, I think I was a sophomore in college when this was happening. And when I was home, I should have remembered this. I should have seen this. But you know, at that point, man, you're just running. A sophomore in college. Bro, I was hitting up every party I could when I was home for the summer. No. Two months after the entire trial, the verdict, everything's moving on. The attorney gets a call. It happened again. Everything that happened to Gabriel basically happens to this new kid. I believe the kid's name was Noah. But almost eerily similar exact circumstances. And then after going through the entire documentary and feeling the pain of Gabriel and his family, you're like, oh my God, this is it. Like, this isn't just a one-time thing. It happens. Maybe not all the time, but it happens to more than just one kid. And, like, the attorney's devastated, I'm devastated. Because you're like, no. 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 And as the documentary shows, all the supports have now been placed. This new commission that just focuses supremely on child services. And realizing that the recommendations that board made for child services were ignored. Because child services is now the secret entity that technically nobody really knows what it does. And the fact that they just kind of ignored the protocol. Now you're just like, You guys don't, do you guys not care about the kids? And that's how it comes off as, whether they do or not. I understand a social worker's caseload is incredible. Then hire more social workers. Maybe create a training program so you can train more and you build them from the ground up. Like, I always say this thing whenever like you see a scandal or anything like that, that happens. If I can think of a better solution than what you came up with, you're doing a bad job. I shouldn't be beating your strategist in terms of solutions here. I shouldn't be doing that. Me, regular Joe guy, who works for a school district, who has his own podcast, who just kind of lives life as a single dude in his Jesus Christ, not late 20s. Oh, that shouldn't happen. And just kind of, at the way the documentary ends, you're like, Jesus Christ, they're going to go through the whole process again with a whole new family, eerily similar circumstances to what happened to Gabriel. And I'm just sitting there like, I can't take it anymore. And then the documentary ends and I'm just sitting there heartbroken. Because, I mean, I'm a black man in America, but my mom did a really good job of making sure, like, as I made it, quote unquote. Like, I did what I was supposed. I went to college. I got a degree. I did all these things. And it's not just, it's not even just people of color. This could be happening all over the country to white people, to white kids. But it's just the fact that you have a kid going through this much torment. The people are supposed to be watching out for that. Our social workers, our family services, who it is their literal job just to make sure that their child is being well treated in the home by the, whether it's their foster family, their actual family, or whoever, that they do that. You're supposed to take care of your job. And I get it, your caseload is hard. But you wouldn't sign up for this if you didn't want to, in my opinion. Then don't, in a way, then don't sign up. Somebody will take your place. At least I hope. Somebody who actually wants to take care of families. Well, for those of you who want to watch it, you can go watch The Trials of Gabriel Fernandez. It's a great documentary. It's one of the best documentaries I've ever seen. And Netflix has actually been really bringing the heat lately in terms of those documentaries. I watched The Edge of Democracy, which was talking about, I believe it was Brazil's kind of democratic process and what's been happening. I watched that a few weeks ago, so kind of hazy on that. I've been really hesitant to watch the Aaron Hernandez documentary because he's actually one of my favorite players when he was playing for my squad, the New England Patriots. But eventually I'll watch because that also deserves to be watched. While they don't excuse his behavior, they just kind of give you his mindset, I guess. I don't know. Either way, guys, no, that was the pod. I'll definitely work on that open so it's not 45 minutes long. Maybe I can cut it down to 10, maybe 15 minutes. But just kind of the XFL, you know, it's important. It could definitely be hugely important, but that's just my opinion. Yeah, if follow the podcast on Facebook and Twitter at YCMWT. Don't forget to follow those pages. Stay up to date with actual content. I gotta find a way to maybe video this one. This one might just end up being a just full thing since it's 45 minutes. I'm not willing to just try to find a way to make up for my points in a 45 minute video, kind of show out. I don't know. I'll think of something. But don't forget, you can email the podcast at myycmwt, which is myycmwt@gmail.com. Send in your questions, and I promise I'll answer them as soon as I can. You can also call the podcast at 805-539-2698 and leave a message. I'll also get back to you as soon as I can. This is, you know, it's something that just kind of have to get used to again. What else? Thank you guys so much. Being back has actually been really cool. I didn't think I was going to start off this heavy kind of being back, but you know, that documentary needed to be talked about. And I think this kind of side of the XFL also needed to be talked about. But you know, yeah. Sorry, this is a really crap transition to the ending, but just talking about it makes me really sad. And Gabriel, God, I wish you had a chance to actually really live your life to its fullest, but I mean, you're in a better place, so yeah. Either way, guys, that was a podcast. I'll see you guys next week. I actually might be talking a little bit more about that married woman scenario, because she's kept up correspondence with me via social media, and obviously I am not interested, and I'm very curious to see how she got my one of my social media platforms. So I'm gonna keep that 100 with y'all. I actually also might have a guest, so yeah, and also gonna talk dating misconceptions, because some of y'all nasty. It ain't just the dudes neither. So yeah, I'll talk to you guys later. Take care of yourselves. I love you guys. Bye.